Let's go ahead and get started. Our agenda is here. On the agenda today is basically an introduction to the participants on the channel today, reviewing the purpose of this call, spending a decent bit of time refining the problem statements, and then if we have time, reviewing and refining the work plan that we have. Anything else that folks want to add to the agenda? Anything else that's important to discuss today? Uh, 415 area code, who's that?
That's Greg Kidd, just dialing in from San Francisco.
Hey, Greg. Okay, all right, let's go ahead and get started then. Matt Collier, do you mind scribing?
No problem.
Okay, thank you. All right, first up is just an introduction to yourselves. If you have access to the IRC channel, please just type out your name, who you're affiliated with, and what you hope to get out of the work. If you're not on the channel, feel free to just start talking and we'll start writing down who you are.
Yeah, Mano, I don't have access to that IRC channel for some reason. It's just Bill.
Okay. Go ahead and just do a quick introduction to yourself, Bill, then.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Mano. Good morning, everybody. My name is Bill DiLorenzo. I'm currently doing some consulting, product management and project management consulting for a credit trust. I have an interest in credential architecture and emerging standards and how that's going to apply to the credit trust and its products and services. This is my first opportunity to attend one of these meetings, and for now I'll probably be auditing what's going on, and maybe I can make a contribution in not too distant future. And that's pretty much it, short and sweet.
Great, thanks, Bill. We just had a 515 area code join. Who's that?
Richard.
Hey, Richard. Richard, we're typing out introductions into the IRC channel, name, affiliation, and what you hope to get out of the work. If you have access to the IRC channel, if not, you can just talk your introduction if you'd like.
I do. I'll type it in.
Okay, thanks. Okay, we'll wait a bit longer. Many of the folks on the call are the people that have been involved with the Credential CG over the past year plus, or the web payments work over the past 4+ years. So nice to see so many friendly IRC Knicks, I guess. 908 area code, who's that?
It's Eric.
Hey, Eric. Hey, Eric, we're asking everyone to type in their name, their company affiliation, and what they hope to get out of the work, just so we have introductions down in the
minutes.
Will do. Thanks. Okay. While folks kind of finish that up, I'm going to move on to the next agenda item, which is the reviewing the purpose of this call. We had a meeting in the web payments interest group last week, and I think that there was a desire to make sure that we polish up the problem statement around what this task force is going to be doing, so we have broad buy-in before the task force starts, specifically broad buy-in from organizations that have been kind of sitting on the sidelines or are not participating yet because they feel that they have not been heard. So we're going to try to make sure that we really understand, everyone on the call really understands the problem statement and feels that it is right, it strikes the right balance with what we want to accomplish. And then once we have that, we can then go to the other things in the proposal. So the purpose of this call is to effectively refine the problem statements, make sure that we're aligned on the work plan, and then we will take it back to the web payments IG for them to officially create and start the task force. David Ezell, since you're the co-chair for the Web Payments IT group, did I speak out of turn? Does that sound right to you as far as what we're trying to accomplish today?
It sounds right to me. I've never heard you speak out of turn. I have heard you ahead of the curve, but not out of turn.
Well, thank you. Okay, all right. So with that, let's go ahead and not waste any time and jump into it. Let's go ahead and review the problem statements first. Let's see. Next topic up. The problem statement can be found here. I'm dropping a link into the IRC channel. This is the proposal for the Verifiable Claims Task Force. If you read down a bit, there's a section that talks about the goals of the task force, and effectively the goal is to determine if the W3C should create a working group, an actual technical working group, to standardize technology around the Verifiable Claims ecosystem. That didn't seem to be very controversial. We are specifically talking about user-centric verifiable claims, so user-centric credentials. This is different from service-centric credentials. We'll get into those definitions in a bit. But at a high level, does anyone, you know, upon reading the goals, does anyone have any issue with the goals of the task force or any questions about it?
Manu, I have a question. I probably should use
sure.
Q+. The goals seem good as far as they go. Is there a goal to make sure that whatever is done here is going to work in browsers?
That is a good question. I think what the task force would do, let me see if I think that comes in the charter discussion, and the discussion that the task force is happening before we can even get to a charter, I think we need to talk about, you know, the problem statement and what we hope to accomplish. And if what we hope to accomplish involves the browser in any way, I would expect a browser API to come out of it. I know that the Credential CG has heavily engaged the Credential Management API, the browser API. So I would expect that that would just be a natural part of the discussion. So I think that that goal would be something that would come out of the task force in charter creation, in asking the Web Payments IG to create a charter that takes browser APIs into account. But I guess the real question, the one that you're asking, is should we specifically point it out somewhere?
Well, so I've actually done what I really wanted to do, was just to bring it up. Whether it's here actually in the charter or not is probably not so important, as it is that people realize that for the Web Payments IG, that will be a really big boulder. So
okay.
as long as people understand that, it's fine with me if it stays like it is.
Okay. So we have a Verifiable Claims Task Force kind of work plan page. And if you look at the desired characteristics, and we have not discussed this at all. This is the task force would be discussing this, but under desirable characteristics, we have a section that says web browser APIs for issuing, storing, and consuming credentials. So it's written down, and I would expect us to discuss that.
Okay, thank you.
But that's in the work plan. Okay. You're happy with that, David? Is that okay with you then?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sorry.
Okay. Any other concerns about the goals of the group? The general goal just being figure out if W3C should do something about this problem or not. Okay. I think what we might do is for each one of these sections, actually get a straw poll vote down from everyone that's on the call, so people get to plus one or minus one it. So the proposal is adopt the goals statement as it exists in the verifiable claims task force proposal. So let's give this a shot. If you agree with, you know, the text in the goal section, just do a plus one. And then I think, okay, all right. So we've got quite a number of positive votes in. Any objections from anyone? Okay. All right, so that's resolved. Great. Let's skip past weekly meetings for right now. Let's just go through each one of these items because, you know, I think that there are a few people that want to make sure that there is buy-in on every single one of these sections. Our weekly meetings are effectively going to be run exactly like this call is right now. So we've got the Verifiable Claims Task Force. We actually have a wiki page, weekly meetings. There's a wiki page here that has all the dial-in information that you used to join today. Does anyone have a concern or issue with the way that we've effectively been running the credential CG calls, meaning that the calls are minuted, they're public, they're recorded? Does anyone have any issues with the time, how we dial in, how we take minutes? Anything of that nature? Okay.
I was looking at the information on that page. I think the text for the links is correct, but the actual links go to the wrong place, it looks like. So, like the IRC goes to the old IRC channel for credentials.
You are correct. Yep, that's wrong. We should fix that. Okay, so with the modulo that we fix those links, the actual links themselves and not the text. Any other concerns? Okay, so the proposal is to adopt the weekly telecon format tools and time listed here with a change to with fixes pointed out by Dave Longley, fixes to the URLs pointed out by Dave Longley. So there's the proposal. Plus one, minus one, plus zero.
I think that's everyone if you count the four plus ones.
Okay. All right. I don't see Greg, but Greg Kidd.
I was the first one on there, from my view.
Not Kellogg Kidd, I don't think. Yeah, Kidd. Greg Kidd. There, we've got two Gregs. Greg, you're not the only Greg on the call anymore. We've got Greg Kidd and
okay.
Greg Kellogg now. All right, I'm going to go ahead and resolve that. We don't have any objections, doesn't seem. Okay, next up is the section on definitions. They're just three very basic definitions. Thank you, Shane, for fixing the URLs before the call is ended. Awesome, thank you. We have a section on definitions where we define what we mean by a verifiable claim, what we mean by user-centric, and what we mean by service-centric. So this will take a bit more explanation. The verifiable claim one is the easiest definition. So actually, let me give a link to this definition. So verifiable claim is a cryptographically non-repudiable set of statements made by an entity about another entity. So it's basically one entity saying something about another entity. It is cryptographically provable that entity A said something about entity B, and it's non-repudiable, meaning that entity A can't then later claim that they never said that thing about entity B. Any issue with the scope of that statement or wording?
So, Manu, I actually liked what you said better than what's typed. I think a cryptographically provable set of statements made by an entity about another entity. The only problem with non-repudiatable is its ontology points to God. It's sort of like truth, and it shall never be broken. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's really that secure.
Dave's on the queue.
Well, I mean, talking about non-repudiability is a fairly common thing with respect to cryptography. The one concern I have with changing I'm fine with changing the language, but changing it to provable, I don't want people to get confused and think that the statements that are being made are themselves provable versus they are authentic. As in, you know that someone made that statement, but that doesn't mean that what they said is necessarily true. So the thing that in the verifiable claims, the technology that we're looking for here is to be able to prove that you know that somebody made a certain statement versus the statement is cryptographically provably true. You know, I might say you have a driver's license, and whether or not you decide to trust me has to do with your relationship with me versus me making a statement that could somehow cryptographically be proven that I actually possess a driver's license. And that, you know, those are two different things.
Right, understood. Just step myself back on the queue real quick to say, at first I thought secured, cryptographically secured, because it also is not as, apocalyptic as non-repudiatable. But I also then promised to shut up if nobody likes that. It's not a big deal.
So, David, you're saying you like the term cryptographically secure better than
I do, but if nobody else does, let's move on.
I'd be okay with that. It's vague enough it's both vague enough and specific enough to I think get the point across without confusing people.
Okay, so the proposal is to change cryptographically non-repudiable to cryptographically secured.
The only concern I might have is that people might start confusing that for with encryption, which you know may or may not. That's not the main goal of being able to make these statements. Being able to encrypt them is different from being able to prove that they are authentic, in the sense that you know for a fact that a certain party made the statements.
Okay, so we have concerns with secured and.
Maybe just cryptographically authentic. Is that too much?
David, authentic, cryptographically authentic?
That's fine with me.
Okay. Any objections to changing non-repudiable to authentic?
I'm just going to comment. This is Dan. That I think the right term is non-repudiable, but we can accept authentic now, but if we end up with challenges or confusion later, we should consider replacing that back again with repudiable.
Okay.
Actually, Manu, I'd like to withdraw the suggestion. Okay. If people are comfortable with the apocalyptic version, that's fine with me.
Okay. All right. So no change. Okay. And just to be clear, I mean, just because we're agreeing to things today doesn't mean that if we get new data in as we go through this process that we can't change. I mean, this is, you know, we're not, I don't think we're setting any of this stuff in stone. We're just saying this is where we'd like to start off, and we have buy-in on where we'd like to start off. Okay. The other two definitions here are around design philosophies around verifiable claims and credentials. So there's something that we're calling a user-centric design philosophy and a service-centric design philosophy. User-centrism has to do with putting kind of people in the middle of an ecosystem, meaning that they have a fairly large amount of power in the ecosystem, meaning they have choice, whereas a service-centric ecosystem puts the services in the center. And the service-centric systems effectively give a lot of power to the services and not that much power to the users of the system, the entities. And we have a section of ramifications when you take each approach. So ramifications of user-centric versus service-centric architecture. And we've tried very hard to kind of bulletize the list. I don't know if it would really help to go through each one of these bullet items, mainly because it's supposed to be a summary of what everything the credential CG was discussing, and we want to avoid debating the language here, just because we could take up the entire call to do it. I think the point being made, the reason that we created this user-centric versus service-centric comparison is because we need to demonstrate that what we're attempting to do is something that doesn't really have a set of standards behind it. So if you look at, for example, service-centric credentialing, people can argue that OpenID Connect and OAuth to a certain degree, are service-centric architectures for doing verifiable claims, right? You can make that statement and not be completely wrong in saying that. But to say that there is a user-centric mechanism to do that, I think would be a big stretch, meaning that I don't think that there are very many, at least we've done a huge survey of all the technologies that exist today, and we have not found standards around user-centric approaches to this process, especially ones with standards. So that's the core of the argument, is that all of the systems that have been created to do verifiable claims have been service-centric designs, and they haven't been user-centric. And so what we mean by that is that, you know, users are effectively the ones that get to choose where their credentials are stored, when they're sent, and what software they use to effectively, you know, work with those credentials. It means that issuers are independent from consumers, and those two parties are independent from where you store your credentials. The claims are associated with entities, not particular services. So there's a kind of a huge laundry list of the differences between user-centric and service-centric, and that's what we're basing our argument around. Let me stop there and see if there are any questions or concerns on that bulleted list of user-centric versus service-centric architecture. Here's a link to that list for those that don't have it in front of them.
Manu, I think it might be a good idea to maybe do like a straw poll of people asking if they think that the differences between these two architectures is significant, and that there's agreement that there's a need for a standard for a user-centric architecture-based system.
Okay, so the proposal would be there is a significant difference between user-centric and service-centric architectures when it comes to verifiable claims, something like that?
Sure. Yeah, I think that's the first poll, and the second one is that there's a the second one will kind of get into the problem statement more. I don't know if you plan on doing other straw polls by the problem statement.
No, we're just doing the vocabulary right now.
Okay.
And then I don't know who guest 48 is. You might need to change your nick/nick.
I changed chat clients. This is John. That's me.
Okay.
Thanks for the tip.
And then if you have no opinion, do a +0, because it's also important to, you know, have a response if they think that some people didn't speak up because they didn't understand the difference.
So all we're saying right now, Manu, is that we understand there is a difference, right?
Yeah, you're basically saying you believe that there's a significant difference between user-centric and service-centric architectures when it comes to verifiable claims.
If you do, okay. There is a difference.
Okay. Yeah. Was that Jim Goodell that was speaking?
That was Eric.
Okay, Eric.
Got it.
Hey, Jim. All right, so that's resolved. We're going to jump back up to the top, back up to definitions. Okay, so we only really have three definitions here. We tried to get the minimal number of definitions that would enable us to make a proposal, and the only definitions we felt we needed were verifiable claim, user-centric, and service-centric, and we used those words throughout the rest of the document. Does anyone feel like we need other definitions at this point? We can always add them in time, but have we been using vocabulary that anyone on the call doesn't quite understand or get? Okay, so then the proposal is adopt the definitions as they stand in the verifiable claims task force proposal. Let's see. And then +1, -1, +0, -0 if you want. All right, anyone else? All right, resolved. Next up is the problem statement. This is the meat of what we're trying to get to today. So hopefully you guys have been able to see, have been able to read through the problem statement at this point. We are going to go through it point by point, but before we do that, is there anyone that feels that missing or something should be changed? Anyone that read before the call and feels it needs to be shifted to something else? Okay, so this is the primary statement that, you know, W3C staff wanted to make sure that we had good buy-in for. All right, so I'm going to just start. Oh, go ahead, David.
Just a quick question, reading through it really quickly. So I actually had something that was worrying me, but I can't find it now. Sorry for the stop.
Okay. Well, I mean, we'll hopefully hit it as we go through through it. All right. So starting off, there's currently no widely used user-centric standard for expressing and transacting verifiable claims, also known as credentials and attestations, via the web. So that is our foundational problem statement. You can't do this today. You can't do this in a user-centric way today. There are no standards for it. Data has been gathered demonstrating a desire to create such an interoperable ecosystem around the expression and transmission of verifiable claims. The second statement is just a provable fact. We collected data. We can point to the data. There are 44 organizations that participated in it. The vast majority of them want to see this work start. Any concerns or issues with the either of those sentences? Okay. We go on to saying these are the problems that exist today, and we tried to boil it down to the bare minimum that would be easily understood by someone that is not familiar with the problem space. So we start off by saying, in existing service-centric architectures, identity services inject themselves into every relationship in the ecosystem. So this is effectively OpenID Connect and the first version of OpenID and login with Google Plus and things like that. What this means is that users can't easily change their service provider without losing their digital identity. So if your identity is tied to a service, it is difficult, if not impossible, to move away from that service because you're effectively tied to that URL. This leads to vendor lock-in, identity fragility, and identity fragility effectively means that your identity can be lost easily if a service goes away, reduced competition in the marketplace because you have lock-in, and reduced privacy because your identity provider is in the center of all of your exchanges of your claims, your personal information. Okay, that's the first bullet point. Is there anything in there that's confusing or you feel could be clarified?
Manu, I'm sorry, I'll queue.
Okay, Shane, you're on the queue.
I just want to say that I mean, I didn't get from privacy that you meant the thing I cared about. So it may be that the term privacy could be expanded slightly, or maybe I'm just the only one who didn't get that.
No, it came up before when we were crafting this item. It was really hard to get privacy in there, and that's the only place that we talk about privacy when that's one of the most important things behind a user-centric design. Is that you're protecting the person's privacy, or you go to great lengths to protect it? Any ideas on how we could fix that or make it more clear?
I'd hate to waste the time on this call trying to do wordsmithing, but it sounds like you agree with me that it could be harder. We could say more in some place anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody else misunderstand what privacy meant? Anybody else on this call? I mean, you could mention it in the IRC channel if you also misunderstood.
Yeah, I don't know if I misunderstood that, but I had typed in earlier what I forgot the last time when I interrupted everybody, which is privacy also means a lot in the transaction sense to the merchant that is checking the credential of the person whose privacy we're worried about. So it's actually important to both ends, because, you know, patterns of these sorts can be picked up by a service provider and used for all kinds of purposes. So I know that this is a very, very big deal for merchants. So I think privacy definitely has to be in there, and I think it would be good to mention both ends of the privacy equation.
So privacy being important to retailers and privacy being important to customers, David, or?
Yeah, I mean, to put it in blunt terms, and I didn't hear this from anybody, but I'll make it up. Walmart doesn't want Apple to know how many of these customers have shopped with a given credit card.
Right.
So there is already a lot of consternation out there about this kind of thing.
Right. Let's see. Dave Longley has typed out a suggestion in IRC to add "for all stakeholders" to the end of that statement. So it's saying, you know, this leads to yada, 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 and reduce privacy for all stakeholders. And we outline who the stakeholders are later on in the wiki page. Shane, would that?
Good for me.
Okay, David, that would work for you. Shane, still not yelling about privacy loud enough, or should we take?
I mean, this is just the problem statement. As long as it's clear somewhere else, the benefits in terms of increased privacy, then I think, right, it just becomes a forward reference, and I think that's great. When we talk about benefits for stakeholders, right, we can expand on the things we get from additional privacy.
So in the benefits for stakeholders under people, we list privacy enhanced sharing mechanism. I feel like that's still not strong enough. This privacy bullet point was a separate bullet point for a while, and we folded it into these two words.
I don't mind that. I don't mind that. If we say reduce privacy for all stakeholders, that's fine. When we talk about people, maybe we can add a bullet point about, increased control of what gets exposed, except say that in some fancy way.
Okay. All right. So let's say reduce privacy for all stakeholders. Okay, so the problem statement has been updated. You can refresh if you want. Eric, you're on the queue.
I posted my question. I'm trying to understand, is reduced privacy perceived as a positive or a negative?
A negative. It says, well, yeah, we don't really say.
Is it reduced privacy concerns, or is it reduced privacy is a concern?
Reduced privacy is a concern. So we want to increase privacy, but I think we're not very clear. We end each one of these bulleted items with, this leads to blah, 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 and we mean all of the things it leads to are bad things that we want to avoid. So we're basically saying these are the problems.
Increase privacy, correct?
Yeah, our goal is to increase privacy, but we're talking about the problems. So the problems is reduce privacy for all stakeholders, if that made sense. Did that make sense?
Yeah. And also I noted a couple of issues regarding privacy concerns for EDU and Med, and also banking is under HIPAA today. I know this is more U.S. driven, but I suspect that there's similar issues worldwide.
Okay.
Especially in Germany, it's got some pretty strict stuff.
Yep, good points. Okay. So I'm hearing that we really need to play the privacy thing up a bit more, that we're not being as loud about it as we probably should be. And maybe the place to do it is...
Nano, can I suggest this? It's just a thought here. We're using the word privacy, and I think what we're really saying is we're talking about the control of the data or control of the information. And what I think you're saying here is it's reduced stakeholder control of the information or the data. And that's what we're concerned about, that when you, in your problem statement, because privacy is, you know, one of those words. It's really hard to, you know, is less or more, this is what Gary was saying, is less or more better. It's like, well, it depends on what you mean by it. You know, and it's always relative. Privacy is relative to context and so many different nuances of the word. I've always had a hard time with that word in conversations because people don't always have the same shared opinion of it. But loss of control or reduced control, whatever you want to say, might be a better way of saying it. Just a thought. I'll go on mute.
Okay. So the proposal would be and lead to reduced control of
data by stakeholders.
Data? Okay.
By stakeholders.
Okay.
Yeah. Because personal, I think also, you know, I don't think corporations call this personal. It just doesn't get defined that way. It's usually defined as proprietary or confidential, you know, intellectual property. There's a whole bunch of ways if you talk about data by a company that gives competitive insights, then you call it personal. It's just data. And then they have a bunch of modifiers and adjectives they stick on.
Right. So to push back on that a tiny bit, you know, it is reduced, you know, reduced control of data is bad for people. It is probably bad for issuers. I think maybe the current mega super providers would say that that is a good thing because it gives them more control over the data. I don't know if that's nitpicky. Meaning
yeah, this
that
is Dan. I also think that if we modify the sentence to talk about reduced control over data, I suspect that people who have not participated in any of these conversations will look at that and will have no idea which data we're talking about unless we go on to specify. And that if we say we mean privacy, they'll say, oh, well, why didn't you say privacy? So I think...
Right.
I think there's a lot more that we can say about privacy.
Yeah.
Right.
I think what we...
Yeah, you could do that.
It might be a good idea to take what Richard's saying and put it in the stakeholders' benefits section and talk about control of confidential information in that section.
I like that.
Okay, so benefits for stakeholders, people, and this section is really, it's nascent. It's not done completely, but I'm adding a bullet item under people for control of, what was the wording?
Confidential information.
Confidential information. Control of confidential information. What about control of, control of confidential information. So that's been added as a bullet point for benefits under people. Okay, so that change has been made. I note we have 10 minutes left and two bullet items to go to claim that this call was successful and that we got through the problem statement. So are there any issues with the first bullet point? Anything else that people feel should be changed? Okay, second bullet point. There is no interoperable standard capable of expressing and transmitting rich verifiable claims that cuts across industries. For example, finance, retail, education, and healthcare. This leads to industry-specific solutions that are costly, inefficient, proprietary, and inhibits a user's ability to manage their digital identities in a coherent way. Concerns about the second bullet item. Okay, so Shane is saying we've got EG, EG comma, change. Wong Lee is saying change inhibit users' ability to. Okay, do people understand what inhibit users' ability to manage their digital identities in a coherent way means? This is a change that we made. I'm going to take
it's a bit of a mouthful.
Okay, go ahead.
It's a bit of a mouthful, but I don't know how to say it better or more succinctly.
Yeah, what we were going for is the notion that in a service-centric architecture, your identity is essentially fractured across a number of different services, and there's no easy way for you to know exactly where your information is. And at any given time, you know, you have different accounts all over the place with different pieces of information about you, rather than it all being focused and centralized around you. And so, you know, we were looking at it and saying, you know, it's kind of incoherent trying to figure out where your identity is and how it works in a service-centric ecosystem. That's what we're going for. So if anyone has any better wording, that'd be great. Or maybe people are okay with it.
Actually, this is Shane. I don't love coherent. It implies a level of cognitive ability, right? I mean, it's like, and I'm not sure that's the problem. The problem is that it's, you know, widely distributed as the same, right? Or maybe this is a different meaning of the word coherent. I'm looking at the word in the wrong way.
Would cohesive be a better term here? Since we're really fractured identity.
If you want cognitive, you could say cohesive, comprehensible way. I mean,
right. I think you're after cohesive or consistent, something like that.
Sorry, I was muted. Does anyone, I'm going to make a proposal for cohesive. Does anyone else feel like another word would be better there? I know, Dan, you made another suggestion.
And Eric suggested standardized.
Standardized way.
Well, I do think the service-centric systems do have a standardized way. You can talk about SAML or OpenID Connect, and these things are standards, and they have ways of expressing information. It's just that your digital identity is kind of fractured all over these different services. There is no user-centric standardized way of doing it. That's certainly true. But I think what we're looking for is more about bringing your identity together in a way that, and that's really where the focus is, versus it not being a standard.
And Nate is suggesting maybe we can add that is not fractured between different systems. So that would change the sentence to inhibit a user's ability. So we, you know, this leads to blah, 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 that inhibit users' ability to manage their digital identities in a cohesive way that is not fractured between different systems.
That's a lot of like negatives going back and forth. With doesn't inhibit, and then adding more qualifiers to it.
Nate, are you saying we shouldn't do the?
No, I like the idea. I just like when you said it out loud, it seemed to make the sentence like a little bit complex.
Okay. All right. So. Right now, the proposal is just to change to cohesive, change the word to cohesive and keep that. Okay. Any issues? Any other issues with the second bullet item?
Manu?
Yep.
I just want to make sure that we're not saying that that one is restricted to only put their credentials together in one place. In other words, we're not implying that you must put them all in one place.
Yeah, I don't think we're saying that. I think the problem statement is saying that with a service-centric ecosystem, you have no choice but to spread out your identity, whereas we would like to design a system where you're not inhibited from doing that if you so choose.
Okay, but the important words are if you choose to, right?
Yeah, and people I'm trying to see, you know, we might be able to cover that in benefits for stakeholders, you know, be able to say, like, that you can combine your identity how you would like.
Okay.
So add that bullet item, Longley.
Yeah, I was trying to see if it's already covered, but we might want to add one. I don't see it in here, so we should probably add it.
Okay, could you add that to the bulleted list?
Yeah.
Okay, any other changes to the second bullet item? We'll move on to the third bullet item. Okay, and hopefully the third bullet item is not, it's hopefully the easiest one. There is no standard that makes it easy for users to assert their qualifications to a service provider. For example, I am a citizen of the USA, I am a board certified doctor, et cetera. Any issues with that third bullet item?
Makes it easy is a little bit weak. Maybe affords.
Okay, so there's no standard that affords users to assert their qualifications to a service provider, enables. Thoughts on affords, enables, or another word?
I like makes it easy.
I suggest it allows.
Allows implies permission, and I don't think it's an issue of permission. It's an issue of a well-defined mechanism that makes that assertion unambiguous.
That's a good point.
Okay, so allows is off the table.
I mean, that's why I used affords as an affordance, but perhaps some other words in there that provides an affordance for users.
We looked at affords before, and we were trying to put it into language that, and this is, you know, who knows if this is true or not, but it seems like makes it easy is easier for people to understand than affords. But I think that's it's a stretched argument. So Daniel Burnett is doing a plus one for makes it easy. Nate did a plus one for makes it easy.
Well, I won't be in the way of that. That was the way it read to me.
Shane is saying affordance is not a word in common use. I mean, I think you're right. It does afford. It's an affordance. Simple. How about simple? Makes it simple. There is no standard that makes it simple for users to assert their qualifications to a service provider. We've got a plus zero on that one.
Provides a mechanism?
That provides a mechanism. So you could argue that OAuth and OpenID Connect do provide a mechanism to assert things like address and email address, but not much else.
Okay, well, maybe makes it easy is the simplest way to state the sentiment then.
okay, well, it seems like okay, we've got enough, I think, plus ones for makes it easy to keep it, understanding that hopefully this will not be a point that people rake us over the coals on. Richard is saying enables. The issue with enables, Richard, is that you could argue that there are other specs that enable that to happen, but it's not easy to do it. It's actually very difficult. Okay, Greg, would you have any issue with keeping it makes it easy for now?
No, it's
anyway?
Fine. It's fine.
Okay, all right. So let's get a proposal down. Are there any other concerns with the problem statement? Do people feel that the problem statement with the updates that we've made during this call, that's a good place to start? Like that's a good problem statement. Did we miss anything? Anything else that's, you know, of concern? Okay, then the proposal is to adopt the problem statement.
Sorry, I was muted. Sorry, Mona. I had put something in the IRC channel. There's another point. It's sort of the converse of the make it easy to expose information. And I put in here, there's no standard that makes it easy for users to restrict the information that's exposed to service providers to the bare minimum the service provider requires. It's part of the conversation we have in web payments a lot, right? About that contract between you and the merchant, only giving them what they need.
Yep.
I'm not sure we have to add this to the problem statement. It just felt like it was missing.
I think you're absolutely right. Anyone see plus ones, minus ones for adding it to the problem statement?
I think that's covered in the benefits to stakeholders, isn't it?
That's true. I guess the question is, should we really bring it up in the problem statement that says it's very difficult for people to kind of pick and choose what they're going to share with other people?
It comes down to the problem statement is, what problem are we trying to solve, right? And then the follow-on is, by solving this problem, what do we do? What do we get?
Right.
I'm not married to this. I just thought I'd bring it up. Greg says plus one to add it.
I mean, it definitely is a problem that is in the scope of things that we would like to address.
Is it covered in the first bullet point about reduced privacy for all stakeholders, or do we feel like that doesn't cover it enough in the problem statement itself?
I think it's weakly covered in the first bullet item. We've got a plus zero.
If there's not a lot of support for this, I mean, I'll back off from it. I was just throwing it out there.
All right. Yeah, I think if we got at least four or five plus ones to adding it, we would add it. But I think people are still kind of mulling it over. We've got a number of plus zeros at this point. Okay. All right. So let's not add it now. But again, you know, if it becomes clear a couple of weeks down the road that we really should have something in there about it, we'll add it at that point. Okay, so we're at the end of the hour. Let's try to get a proposal in really quickly. Adopt the problem statement in the verifiable claims task force proposal based on the adopt the problem statement in the verifiable claims task force proposal with the changes made during the call today. All right, so there's the proposal, plus one, minus one, plus zero. And waiting for the last set of votes to come in. All right. That is resolved. Fantastic. Thanks, everyone. That's great. We accomplished what we needed to accomplish today. We are going to have another call next week where we're going to go through the rest of the proposal, talking about things that are out of scope, the stakeholders, benefits to stakeholders, how the task force will operate, what we see as success criteria, deliverables, milestones, things of that nature. Okay, that's it for the call. Is there anything else that folks would like to bring up, anything we should be aware of before the call next week? Okay, call next week is same time, same channel. You do the same thing that you did this week to join it. Thanks again, everyone, so much for the call, and have a great rest of the week. Bye.